Chapter 57. Sass the Wonder Dog. The Chronicles of a Saskatchewan Mouse Hound. My childhood experience of pets was somewhat eclectic. Over the years, my family was joined by two cats, Wilberforce and Ebenezer, and a rabbit, named Hopsibar. Also, a light blue budgerigar, two cockatiels, and a collection of short-lived hermit crabs, but never a dog. Then there was Sass. Here, I've chosen to recount, in no particular order, the mostly humorous, sometimes embarrassing, or concerning incidents of our extraordinary years together, and to do this, best I begin at the beginning. Sass was conceived at Horse Creek, on the Riverina, in southern New South Wales. His mother, Cumla, was a black droopy-eared, middle-sized pet shop dog, and his father, Coco, was a border collie kelpie cross-working dog, from Copperbella Station, the property adjoining Horse Creek. Sass was born in Sydney, and I officiated at his birth, midwife to both he and his sister, Pushka. When Sass was 6 weeks old, we left Sydney. He sat in the passenger seat of my beat-up VW Beetle, for the two-hour run down the Hume Highway to Goulburn. Goulburn was, and is, an influential country town, where we, my partner, Peter Bluey, myself, and Sass the Wonder Dog, would begin the next chapter of our lives. Chronicle Number 1. Sass was a most engaging puppy. Not long after we moved to Goulburn, Peter suggested a day out at the polo, where we'd watch the next generation of young, fit, squatters, on horseback, whacking a ball across a grassy paddock with a long-handled wooden mallet. Peter, a wannabe squatter, looked the part, wearing a tweed sports coat, with leather elbow patches, over a polo neck jumper, navy moleskin trousers, and imported Mexican boots. At the time, Peter was driving a bright yellow ute, a most appropriate vehicle for a day at the polo. We headed out with our wicker picnic basket in the back, filled with delectables, and Sass with us in the front, wearing his smart red leather puppy collar and matching lead. At the polo ground, he sat quietly in the back of the ute looking cute. A number of passers-by stopped to pat him and chat. One patter asked, "What's the breed?" "Quick as a flash," Peter retorted. "He's a Saskatchewan mouse hound." And we all roared with laughter. But the fantasy breed stuck. Thereafter, he was known as Sass, the Saskatchewan mouse hound. What an unexpectedly well-bred dog. Chronicle Number 2. As we adjusted to our new life in Goulburn, Sass grew. Taller now, he began raiding the large kitchen rubbish bin. Peter, who had much more dog training experience than I, had the solution. He made our walloper by tightly rolling a newspaper and taping it in three places. Hitting the walloper against a hard surface made a loud crack, and, it was hoped, the sudden explosive sound would cure Sass of his bad habit. Peter explained it was important to catch him in the act, so we set a trap by placing a tasty morsel on top of the rubbish, under the bin lid. Then we waited. Sass came in to investigate, nudged off the lid, retrieved the morsel, and began eating. Caught in the act, the walloper was whacked down hard, against the bench top. And Sass got one hell of a fright. The strategy worked, and it was the last time he raided a bin anywhere. Thereafter, just mentioning the word walloper had instant behavior modifying results. Smart dog. Chronicle Number 3. Sass was obsessed with tennis balls. I'd often play ball with him. We had great fun, because he was a terrific retriever, always dropping the ball at my feet, willing me to throw it again. When I was jack of the game, I'd hide the ball and show him my empty hands, after which he'd scurry off and return with another that he'd hidden somewhere in the yard. I fantasized this was irrefutable evidence that Sass could count. Numerate dog. Chronicle number 4. Sass slept in the large living area at the back of the house, but was not allowed in the bedrooms. Each morning, when he heard me stir, he'd come bounding down the hall and stand at the doorway, wagging his tail vigorously. His body language saying, "I've been waiting ages for you to wake up. Come on, get out of bed now." But on winter nights, the interconnecting door between the living area and the bedrooms was closed. I had a collection of thickish dyed hand-spun wool, wound into balls. One day, I decided to use the balls to make an artistic arrangement in a large circular basket. Viewing my handiwork, I was pleased with the color arrangement and strategically placed the basket on the living room floor for maximum decorative effect. Next morning, when the interconnecting door was opened, Sass's ball obsession was writ large. We found the floor covered with a woolen thread version of a Jackson Pollock masterpiece. Sass had spent the night pushing every ball of wool around the living area with his nose. When we saw his artwork, we laughed so hard it was impossible to get cross with him. And I remember it took me hours to re-ball the mess of threads, and then store them well out of Sass's reach. Artistic dog. Chronicle number 5. Sass was well behaved and obedient. He understood and obeyed both verbal and non-verbal commands. The verbal ones included directions to sit, stay, lie down and come behind. When he was out of earshot, he would respond to non-verbal commands. For example, when I raised an arm to head height, he would immediately drop to the ground. Also, he would cast to the left or the right on an arm signal. I'm told many working dogs are trained to do this, but Sass had had no training. And I did wonder if this ability was his genetic inheritance from his working dog father. Sass came and went from the house as he pleased, wandering the neighborhood to visit friends, both canine and human. On one occasion, I found him standing on the far side of the busy four-lane highway behind our house, about to cross. I stopped the car, got out, caught his eye, raised my arm and he dropped. I then got back into the car and drove around to pick him up. One afternoon, he returned to the house and sank to the floor, where he remained for a full day and night eating and drinking, but not able to stand, to get outside to pee. We assumed he'd been hit by a car. On the second day, we took him to the vet. The vet immediately applied pressure to each side of his abdomen, releasing a stream of pee that became a large puddle around his feet. He recovered quickly, and thankfully it wasn't long before his sense of humor returned, though he never did regain full strength in his hindquarters. As a result, his exuberant leap into the back of the ute was a thing of the past. Now, we had to lower the tray and help him up. Tough dog. Chronicle number 6. Sass had yet another road accident, but this time it was my doing. I was driving the ute to a small town not far from Goulburn, with Sass in the back. Picture a single-lane bitumen road with gravel shoulders. I was pushing along at around 60 kilometers. In the side mirror, I could see Sass leaning around the cabin to enjoy the breeze that pinned back his floppy ears, flattened his jowls, and lifted his lips to expose his teeth. When I took a corner a little too sharply, he lost his balance and toppled out onto the gravel. I saw him go and pulled up immediately. I then watched in amazement as he got up, shook himself off and scampered back to the ute. I checked him over and was relieved to find nothing was broken, though he did have gravel rash on the inside of one hind leg, the one that hit the gravel first. With Sass back on board, we drove on. Resilient dog. Chronicle number 7. Sass often came with us when we drove to Sydney, riding in the back of the ute. I clearly remember one trip. As we drove down the highway, Peter was talking a lot of rot, so I asked him to pull over. I got out, closed the door, and climbed into the back with Sass for the remainder of the journey. That day, Sass was much better company. When we got to Sydney, finding a shady parking place was always a prerequisite. Once parked, I would let Sass out for a pee. He would pee on command. Can you believe it? I'd say, "Good boy, good boy, good boy," and the pee stream would begin. With his bladder empty, I'd help him back into the ute to have a drink from the water bowl I'd just filled for him. Lastly, I told him to stay. Never once did he attempt to jump out to follow us, and was always so welcoming when we returned. Obedient dog. Chronicle number 8. When I moved to Toowoomba in early 1983, Sass came with me, because I'd been disappointed with the care Peter had provided, whilst I was away from home, either attending conferences, or conducting workshops. The Darling Downs Institute of Advanced Education got two for the price of one, as Sass came with me every day, and before long, became a firm favorite with the students. He had friends on campus I'd never met. As we walked the campus, young people would come up to him, call him by name and give him a pat. He was our fill-in for many students, who were away from home, and missing their own dogs. My boss, the Dean of Creative Arts, always made a huge fuss of Sass. I assume because he was so well behaved. But on one occasion, he caused an embarrassing stir. The track from the textiles demountable to my office took us past the Dean's office. This day, I noticed Sass take a sharp left turn, to walk behind the Dean's secretary, and into his empty office, as the door was open. I watched in disbelief as Sass cocked his leg against the Dean's desk and peed. Fortunately, he only had a dribble in him. Shock, horror. I was outwardly mortified, but inwardly celebrating, as the Dean was unpopular with both students and staff. Word spread like wildfire, and from that day onwards, Sass received additional pats and words of praise for his political statement, when being outspoken in Bugelki Peterson's Queensland, often led to trouble. Political dog. Chronicle number 9. Sass often roamed the campus, always returning to the textiles demountable in the afternoon, after the students had left. Sometimes he was thirsty. If for some reason his water bowl by the entrance steps was empty, he would make a beeline for the men's loo, at the end of the building, to drink from the toilet bowl. But the loo door had a self-closing mechanism. Sass could easily push his way in, but by the time he'd finished drinking, the door had closed tightly behind him, and he was trapped. I always enjoyed the late afternoon silence in the textile space, as I prepared for the next day's classes. In the quiet, I would occasionally hear Sass's pathetic squeaks repeated at intervals, and knew immediately that he was stuck in the loo again, pleading for release. Communicative dog. Chronicle number 10. If, for whatever reason, Sass couldn't find me in the afternoon after class, he'd walk across to the car park, where there were at least 100 other cars, and find mine. He'd make himself comfortable beside the car, until I arrived to drive us both home. Clever dog. Chronicle number 11. Occasionally, I needed to visit my bank in the city centre. The bank was located in an imposing sandstone building on the corner of Ruthven and Margaret Streets. I'd sit Sass down beside the entrance steps, and tell him to stay before going in. When I came out some 10 or 15 minutes later, he would jump to his feet and greet me, as though I'd been gone for weeks. With his black tail waving from side to side, he would triumphantly lead me to the car. Once told to stay, nothing short of an atomic blast would induce him to move, though, possibly a female dog on heat could move him, as the next story illustrates. Reliable dog. Chronicle number 12. One afternoon, we arrived home, and I parked in the carport beside our flat. When I let Sass out, he took off up the street. This was unusual. Even more unusual was that he didn't return before I went to bed that evening, but I left the front door open assuming he'd return sometime. I wasn't overly concerned because, since his Goulburn accident, Sass had developed road sense. At 7 o'clock the next morning, the phone rang, and a gruff male voice said, "Do you own a black male dog?" I replied, "Yes." "Well, come and get him, he's been in our laundry all night." He gave me the address, and I immediately drove up the hill and around the corner to the house, where I found a very sheepish Sass. It transpired that their bitch had just come into season, and as a result, all the male dogs within Cooey, including Sass, were lined up along the front fence waiting for an opportunity. I couldn't understand why the bloke decided to catch Sass, and I never did find out. I must confess I found the whole incident rather amusing, though I am sure Sass did not. When we arrived home the following afternoon, Sass repeated his great escape. But this time I knew where he was headed, so I followed him up the hill, where I was able to intercept him before he got to his girlfriend's house. That night and for a couple more, I kept him inside until morning. Amorous Dog. Chronicle number 13. One quiet Saturday afternoon, as I was typing up lecture notes, with the front door open, I heard a repeated scraping noise coming from the street. Scrape paws, scrape paws, scrape paws. I went out to investigate, and found Sass dragging an unopened 2-kilo packet of dry dog food along the gutter. I've no idea where he got it, but the prospect of walking the street to ask the neighbors if they were missing a packet of dog food had little appeal. If I had, I'd have been forced to admit that my dog was an opportunistic thief. Resourceful dog. Chronicle number 14. Sass and the Garbage Man. In Toowoomba, in 1983, the garbage was collected once a week. The garbage man would walk through the carport, pass the front door, pick up the galvanized iron bin, take it out to the truck, empty it and then return it. One morning, I saw Sass go out to greet him. I then heard an ear-splitting yelp. I leapt up to ask, "Did the dog go yah?" Knowing full well there was absolutely no way. He replied, "Yeah." I checked Sass over to find he'd lost a front tooth in the encounter. The following week, I was keen to observe Sass's reaction to the garbage man, if in fact it was the same person. It must have been, because Sass didn't move from his vantage point at the front door, where he lay watching, with his paws draped elegantly over the top step. I noticed he showed no outward sign of aggression nor fear, as the man came and went. But I sensed he knew the man was dangerous. Discriminating dog. Chronicle number 15. One weekend, I took a break from writing and illustrating lecture notes, to go for a walk in the bush, with one of my students, and her dog. The dogs were mates, and frolicked up ahead, whilst we chatted. Suddenly, we heard a rustling in the bush, maybe a startled kangaroo or a wallaby, and the dogs took off in pursuit. What to do? I stopped and centered myself before loudly bellowing, "Sass, come behind." And, to my utter amazement, he stopped dead, turned around, and scurried back to my side. To this day, I cannot believe that my verbal command overrode his natural instinct to pursue prey. Obedient dog. Chronicle number 16. I'd signed up to have a small exhibition of recent work at Signatures Gallery in Toowoomba. The opening was to be held on Saturday afternoon. In preparation for the influx of textile art enthusiasts, I decided to get to the gallery a little early to help out. Rather than taking the car, Sass and I walked the short distance from the flat to the gallery. As we turned the corner, a very large dog came out of nowhere, and charged at Sass, flipping him into the gutter on his back, locking onto his thigh, and shaking it. Sass was helpless. I reacted spontaneously and threw myself across both dogs. The aggressor got such a shock he ran away. Thankfully Sass was not badly hurt, and nor was I. and we both recovered sufficiently to focus on the exhibition opening. All these years later, I reflect on my instinctual response to protect Sass that day, and I'm left thinking that the impulse to protect a loved one is hardwired. Deeply loved dog. With my plans to visit Scotland moving right along, I needed to find a good home for Sass. There were numerous offers, and he settled in with a Toowoomba family with whom he lived for the rest of his life. Postscript. I understand that dogs were banned on the Institute campus the year after I left. I did wonder if it was Sass's indiscretion in the Dean's office that prompted the ban. The demise of the Saskatchewan Mouse Hound. I returned to Toowoomba in late 1987. I'd visit him occasionally, and always received an enthusiastic welcome. Each time I visited, I was sure I heard him saying, "At last, thank goodness you're here to take me home." One night I had a prophetic dream, directing me to visit Sass. After work the next day, I visited him. We went for a gentle walk, and as we walked, I told him how much I loved him, and how much I regretted not being able to take him home with me. 2 days later, he was dead. Poisoned by yet another paralysis tick. Vale Sass.